Well, this week we are finishing our series talking about lessons from kings. We've been talking about King Jeroboam, we've been talking about King Rehoboam. This week we are going to talk about another king by the name of Asa. King Asa. And we're going to find his story, and it's listed in a couple places. 1 Kings 15, 2 Chronicles 14 through 16. We're actually going to kind of bounce back and forth in both places looking at his story. But King Asa was very different from these last kings we've been looking at. If you look at their record, the Bible would say King Jeroboam and King Rehoboam were both evil in the sight of the Lord. They were both evil in the sight of the Lord. Can you hear me better now? Am I a little louder? I forgot to turn my mic on. But we find something different about King Asa. And in 1 Kings chapter 15, 1 Kings chapter 15, we read about King Asa. And we're going to start in verse 9 and read through verse 14. 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 9 through 14. And this is what it says. In the twelfth year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa became king of Judah, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 41 years. His grandmother's name was Micah, daughter of Abishalom. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. He expelled the male shrine prostitutes from the land and got rid of all the idols his father had made. He even disposed his grandmother, Micah, from her position as queen mother because she had made a repulsive Asherah pole. Asa cut the pole down and burned it in the Kidron Valley. Although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. King Asa was good. He had put God first. I mean, he even kicked his grandmother out of office. You think about it. He kicked his grandmother out of office because she was not doing right. I'm sure we all know a lot of people who we would say are good. We would all like to think of each other as good. Does this mean, when we say we're good, does this mean that we are perfect? Right. We are not perfect. King Asa was no exception. He was no exception. But in the first part of his reign, he was magnificent. We read there what he did. He got rid of those idol worship leaders, those male prostitutes for that idol. And he tore down all of the poles that they used, the Asherah poles that they used to worship other gods. He got rid of it all. He was committed to the Lord. And we see that great example. In fact, in 2 Chronicles 15, 14, it says, they took an oath to the Lord with loud acclamation, with shouting, and with trumpets and horns. And during this time of his reign, these first 35 years, it was great. There was peace. There was joy. There was happiness. Things were different. It wasn't like it was before. Because Asa was following God. But unfortunately, his story doesn't end there. I wish his story ended right there. I wish that's all we had recorded of him. But his story isn't done. His story isn't done. In the first verse of chapter 16, it says that in the 36th year of his reign, that peace was gone. King Asa was the king of Judah. and he was a bitter rival of the king of Israel. His name was King Baal. King Baal. And they were at each other's throats. They did not like each other. They did not get along. And King Baal had hired another kingdom, the kingdom of Aram, to come and help him with things. That's what the Israel nation did. And that king's name was Ben-Hadad. He had hired King Ben-Hadad and all of his military to back up Israel. Well, King Asa said, well, wait a second. What if we just pay him more money? This King Hadad. And let's get his people to not fight. So that's what he did. King Asa of Judah contacted King Ben-Hadad of Aram and said, hey, we're going to pay you more if you won't fight for Israel. If you just let it go. And he said, okay. So how did King Asa do this? Well, he went to the temple. The temple usually had a lot of money in it, a lot of valuable things in the temple of the Lord. They emptied it. Took that money, gave it to them, and said, here you go. Here's your payment. Don't fight for them. And it worked. This plan worked. Now you might say, what's wrong with this problem? Or what's wrong with this plan? What was wrong with what he did? How is this bad? Well, the first problem is, King Asa, he gave in to compromise. That's my first point this morning. King Asa gave in to compromise. Don't compromise. See, here's the thing. King Ben-Hadad of Aram, he was not a good man. He was not a good man. And instead of trusting in God to get him through this situation, like King Asa had done for the first 35 years of his reign, he decided in that 36th year, you know what? I'm going to do this myself. I'll just go take care of this myself instead of relying on God. I'll just go pay this guy off. And he started down a slippery slope. He started to compromise. If you look at times of your life when you've fallen into sin, when you've made mistakes, you could probably trace it back to a series of missteps, a series of small compromises that led to that sin. Remember when I was in college, I told this story a number of years ago, I think when I first came here. When I was in college, I wasn't the best of people. I was taking math classes. I was going to school to be a math major. I was getting in some of the higher classes, and I couldn't keep up. I was having a hard time with it. So I'd get with friends to help with work, and at first it was good, but then we started cheating. We compromised. We found ways to cheat. It caused sin. And I really got in trouble when I got caught. I had to go stand before the dean. That wasn't a pleasant time. But a number of mistakes, willing to cut corners, willing to compromise, led to a lot of sin. I love Paul's words in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. It says, so if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. Don't think we are too good to fall. Don't think we can do anything and it won't affect our faith. Compromise will affect our faith. Jesus said in Matthew 6, 24, he said, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. If you start compromising, remember this. When we start compromising, we cannot compromise and serve God at the same time. You could say it's, in a mathematics term, it's mutually exclusive. Those two things cannot happen at the same time. For example, if you use math, the number 4 and the number 5, they are not the same. 4 is not 5. I don't care what new math we use now. 4 is not 5. They can never be the same. Following our desires and willing to do anything and following God are mutually exclusive. They can't be the same. If we are compromising in our lives, then we are not serving God. We must stay strong in the race and continue to serve. I love the words in Psalm 119, verses 1 through 4, that says, "Blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are those who keep his testimonies, who seek him with their whole heart, who also do no wrong, but walk in his ways. You have commanded your precepts to be kept diligently." King Asa walked in God's ways for 35 years of his reign. You're 36. He shouldn't have stopped and said, "Oh, that's good enough. I can take over now." We don't stop walking in God's ways. We stay humble and we don't let pride creep in. Because this is what happens when pride creeps in. We're willing to compromise because we think we can handle it. We think we can handle it. We think we can take care of it. And guess what? We can't. It always catches up with us. The sin gets us. And if we don't watch out, it will magnify. And it will get worse. In 2 Chronicles chapter 16, if you want to turn in your Bibles over there, we read a little bit more detail than is found in 1 Kings 15. The book of 2 Chronicles gives more detail of King Asa's life. Tells what happened at the end of his reign. And it's not a pretty picture. But in 2 Chronicles chapter 16, we find in verses 7 through 10 this account. This is right after he's had this victory by talking King Ben-Hadad of Aram into not fighting for Israel. They saw this victory. It's right after this. And a seer named Hanani goes to visit him. This is what it says. 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verses 7 through 10. "At that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, 'Because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Were not the Cushites, the Libans, a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horsemen? Yet when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. You have done a foolish thing, and from now on you will be at war.' Asa was angry with the seer because of this. He was so enraged that he put him in prison. At the same time, Asa brutally oppressed some of the people." Doesn't sound like he was a good guy at this point. King Asa could not take the criticism. Funny, that happens when pride gets in the way. We don't want to take criticism. And that's my second point this morning. Constructive criticism. Constructive criticism. Here we have this seer named Hanani. going to King Asa to say that he compromised his faith. He compromised his faith. And he's trying to tell Asa to go back to how he was ruling in those first 35 years. Go back to trusting God. Be fully committed to God. King Asa didn't like it. So he had him thrown in jail. Not the first time a king has thrown a prophet in jail. Remember Jeremiah? King didn't like what he was saying. Threw him in a pit. It's very important how we give and how we receive criticism. It's very important how we give and how we receive criticism. If done wrong, there can be a lot of hurt people. If done right, we've honored God. It looks like from here, Hanani, he was just trying to tell King Asa the truth. Hey, you messed up. Let's take a step back. Let's go back to following God how He was. Let's do it this way. There didn't seem to be another motive. We must be careful about our motives when it comes to criticism. Why are we criticizing others? Are we doing it because we want to be constructive? Are we doing it because we want to genuinely help somebody? Or are we doing it because we have an agenda? Look at your heart. I don't know your hearts. I only know my heart. God knows all of our hearts. Are we doing things because we want to be constructive or because we want to help others? We need to check our motives. But then on the flip side, when we're receiving criticism, how do we take it? Do we get mad at when somebody says, hey, you're not doing something right here? How do we take it? Do we take it genuinely and we're appreciative of the criticism, or do we get mad and want to blow our top? It's just as important how we give as how we receive. If we were prideful, then we would react how King Asa did. He was angry and bitter, and it was all due to pride. If we're humble, then we're willing to listen and critique. Solomon has some good words on this. He wrote in Proverbs 10:17, "He who heeds discipline shows a way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray." Proverbs 12:1, "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid." Proverbs 15, verses 10 and 32, "Stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. He who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever heeds correction gains understanding." None of us are perfect. We've all failed, huh? First one on the list. We were never meant to live this life on our own. It is one of the reasons why we have a church body. We have brothers and sisters who can show love and support by telling us the truth. This verse won't be up on the screen. I read it yesterday and I thought it worked so well with what I'm talking about today. Hebrews 12:14. "Pursue peace with everyone and holiness. Without it, no one will see the Lord." This verse is great for giving criticism and receiving it, because it helps us think about our hearts. Finally this morning, I want to finish King Asa's story. Again, King Asa didn't finish strong. He failed in different ways. He compromised. He let his pride come in and couldn't take criticism. And now we're going to read the rest of it. We're staying in chapter 16 of 2 Chronicles, and we're going to read verses 12 and 13. And this is what it says. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was afflicted with a disease in his feet. Though his disease was severe, even in his illness, he did not seek help from the Lord, but only from physicians. Then, in the 41st year of his reign, Asa died and rested with his fathers. We have here a cautionary tale. This is a great example of, as I've said throughout this whole series, don't do it like me. Don't end like King Asa. Don't end like him. He started strong. He started great. But he didn't finish the race strong. He refused to go to God when he was ill. He simply just continued to rely on man, where he failed the first time when he went to King Ben-Hadad of Aram. He was stubborn. He was prideful. He held a grudge. And just think, what more could God have done with his life? What more could God have used him for? What missed opportunities? Third point this morning, missed opportunities. Don't waste your opportunities. Don't be like King Asa. Don't waste those blessings with a bad attitude. I want you to think about this for a second. There are 1,440 minutes in a day. 1,440 minutes in a day. There are 10,080 minutes in a week. There are 524,160 minutes in a year. In the lifetime of a 65-year-old, there are 34,070,400 minutes. Now, one might say, that's a lot of minutes. Those minutes seem to go by pretty quick, don't they? They seem to fly by fast. We can't get those minutes back. Once we use a minute, they're gone. You know, I laugh and think, if I put something in the microwave and I'm staring at the microwave waiting for it to count down because I'm hungry, I get done and I go, I just wasted 3 minutes staring at a microwave, waiting on my food to get hot when I could have been doing something else. We have a choice. Use your minutes wisely. We can't get those minutes back. We can't get those seconds back, those days back, those weeks back, those months back, when we let pride get in the way. Are we willing to be humble and have our hearts in the right place and be ready for those opportunities? 1 Corinthians 16:13, Paul wrote, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong." Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, and be strong. Be strong in humility. Don't be consumed by pride. Don't be like King Asa. Finish your race strong. Don't be like him. He sputtered at the end. Think of Paul's famous words to Timothy, words we all know. 1 Timothy 4:7-8. "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Finish the race strong. Finish your race strong. Some people may not have even started that race. They may not know Jesus. Today we offer a time of invitation. A time where you can start the race. Start following God for the rest of your life. I don't want you to be like King Esau and end badly, but I want you to start. And if you don't know Jesus, it starts by giving your life to Him, by saying, Jesus, You're my Lord and my Savior, by starting to repent and change your ways, by burying that old life and baptism and starting new, by starting a new walk with God. You can do that today. Come forward. Give your life to Him. We're going to offer a song of invitation. Just come forward then.